Welcome back to the Noise Pop Podcast. I'm your host, Adrian Spinelli, coming to you from Different First Studios in San Francisco, California. We've got a great episode for you today. We're joined in the studio by the man behind Confession Here, my favorite album of 2019, Roberto Carlos Lange, better known by stage name El Lado Negro. His latest album is called This Is How You Smile. It's out now on Revenge International, and Roberto's here in San Francisco to play at Great American Music Hall tonight as part of Noise Pop Festival 2020. And he's here right now in the flesh at Different First Studios this morning to share his My Mix with us. More on that in a second, but first, Roberto, hello.
Hey.
Thank you so much for spending part of your morning with us.
Thanks for having me.
This is cool. The show is sold out tonight.
Yeah, I heard.
Yeah.
Pretty awesome.
Well deserved. I think the last time you played the Chapel last year when you were on the album tour.
Yeah.
And I was at that, and then Noise Pop put on a show at McLaren Park at the Jerry Garcia Amphitheater.
Yeah, that was awesome.
With Mexican Institute of Sound, is that what it was?
Yeah, that was super fun.
Very cool. We're continuing the Noise Pop relationship here with El Lado Negro. So let's see, some background for our listeners on you here. Were you born in Florida?
I was.
Okay, yeah. Born in Florida. Your parents are originally from Ecuador?
They are.
And they settled into New York, then went to Florida, and now you've been in Brooklyn for at least a decade, maybe two?
Yeah, I moved around a lot, but I moved to New York in 2006.
Cool. And this album that just came out, This Is How You Smile, is your sixth studio LP. And then there's been a four-volume series that kind of comes intermittently in between Island Universe Story.
Yeah.
Yeah, part one, two, three, and four. This album really grabbed me because I think it's, there's been so much that's been written like, oh, it's his best work to date. But I think it's kind of fully formed in a certain way. I think that your music really has had an evolution, your discography. Talk a little bit about that evolution and what you've arrived at with This Is How You Smile.
I believe it's maybe it's hard to have perspective on the evolution of like what I've done and like looking at it now, but more so because I almost always feel like I'm like the same person I've always been for a long time. And I think the things that you experience kind of like just become a part of you, and it's not something that I'm like hyper focused on to like be like, oh, this is what's changed. But I think within making this music, I think what changed specifically for this record was the process in which I made it, which in the past I've always made all my work and music, and I still do at home, like at a home studio.
Yeah.
And I share that space with my partner and my wife, and her and I are always like present with each other while we're working. But then also sometimes it's just kind of like, you know, if you have somebody else that you're just like hanging around with at a studio, there's a lot of, I mean, for lack of a better word, distraction. Like you kind of see each other and you're like, I want to hang out.
I know exactly what you mean as somebody who works at home with their partner as well.
So. Yeah. and it's, so this, the process for this record was a little bit different, where I was able to work at a two different studios or three different studios. And there are like more private studios, like friends were letting me use them, or I was renting them from them. And it was a more of like an isolated affair in terms of spending way more time kind of like with a lot less distraction and just focus and intention every day. So I think in terms of evolution, I kind of understood that I needed that to look at the work that I was doing in a different way, in a more hyper-focused way. And I think that was like the outcome of just that, like the record.
For sure.
This Is How You Smile.
Well, I think your music has always had this like self-analysis aspect to it. Like you're always you're coming to terms with your identity and who you are. And maybe in this, as you say, this isolated environment was a way for you to tap into realizations that maybe you hadn't arrived at in the past.
Definitely. Yeah. And it's just pulling from what you know. I mean, like that's kind of like whenever I've worked or made music or just understood the things that I like the most of what I make, it's usually coming from what you just said, which is like self-analyzation and just like learning a lot about myself.
For sure.
Through sound.
And I'll say for our listeners that, you know, I know I say it was my favorite album of last year, but I think for me as somebody who's from South America originally, you know, listeners know I'm from Brazil. There was a lot that I found in it, but I wasn't the only person that thought this album was great, you know, just to kind of reel it off. It was a top 10 album of the year, Pitchfork. It was on pretty much every list. We had it in our top albums at Paste, everybody. So it's just, it's been a great parade around the sun for you this last year. Congratulations, man.
Thanks.
Yeah. You had a massive tour. What have you been doing since that tour?
Resting, sleeping a lot. Yeah. I think there's like a, there's always like, I don't think people know how long I've been touring. I've been touring for like 15 years, you know, turned 40 this year.
Yeah.
And there's like so many things. And I think there was like a culmination of like a lot of moments. And like, I think this record was definitely like a culmination of like a lot of the work that I had been doing with El Lado Negro previous and around it that wasn't related. And we played, I think, 100 shows, but I think people forget, like, you're like, oh, I played 100 shows. They're like, oh, that's great. But you have to get to these shows.
Yeah.
So that's like another 100 travel days. You know?
And even for this show tonight, you got here last night. You know what I mean? You're kind of settled in for a bit in San Francisco. You got to load in this afternoon. You're doing this with us here for an hour.
There's I've taken these past like few months to recuperate and sleep pretty deeply and just kind of just open up like the bandwidths of like reading and calming down. And cool. I stopped using like on a day to day, I was able to like work with some people who were helping me with like do like social media stuff. So I stopped doing that like on a day to day kind of thing. And so that's really helpful as well. I recommend that to everyone.
Yeah.
That's been part of like a huge part of just like these moments of like recuperating and like absorbing like everything that's happened. And I think it's important for anyone who's making anything, like any kind of work, any artist, like writing or visual or sound or music, like you just need more time to absorb like all the things that have just happened. Like I think it's just like almost impossible to like feel everything and understand everything by just, you know, by not stopping. You have to stop and just take more time.
For sure. I appreciate that sentiment. Let's get into my mix here. And this will be kind of fun to get into the nuts and bolts of the music that you listen to and kind of what's informed you a bit. For our listeners on my mix, as we've done in the past, my mix is when an artist curates a playlist of the music and artists who've inspired their recent output, and we talk about them, then we play the track for the listeners and keep the conversation going with a song by the artists themselves, by you at the end. We'll end with an El Lado Negro song, and you've picked a playlist of my mix here for you, and let's get right into the first song.
Definitely.
Yeah. I'll introduce this first one since it's, and I did not plan it this way for what it's worth, but it's a Brazilian artist, and the song is called Costi, and it's by Luisa Brina, O Liquidificador. I think it's Luisa Brina e o Liquidificador, which translates into Luisa Brina and the Blender, you know, and I guess she kind of calls her music or...
No, I think it's a band.
Yeah, the band.
Or
music
like
or what she does, like they are the Blender.
Yeah.
Yeah, cool. Yeah. Right on. So, tell us about this song.
I can't remember how I stumbled upon it, and I think this record was put out in 2017, maybe, and I could be wrong, but I could tell you right now.
Yeah,
2017.
Cool.
And when I listened to it, it blew me away. There's just like an amazing sincerity to the way she writes or the way they write and the way they kind of, there's just like a really great arrangement and just the sound was really cool. And then in this song specifically, it's such a wild arrangement through like the horns and the clarinets and the percussion and the rhythms are just like, they just culminate in really strange ways and it's just fantastic. And to be honest with you, like I can understand Portuguese to a certain extent, but I don't know exactly what she's saying.
Yeah.
And I don't even know what Costi means.
Yeah.
Exciting.
We can fill in some of the gaps. I think it's a proper name, Costi.
Okay.
Yeah. So, because
cool.
It's like, I mean, I know the language, I'm fluent, you know, and it's not like a word that I think it's a proper name.
Yeah. But so. I, for the most part, what's always excited me about sound and music is just, and I think it's what I've always asked folks through the music I make, is just how to experience it without thinking about it too much. And, you know, and things, it doesn't matter what language things are in. It's just, it's important that the music has like a sentiment and it's poetry, and I know there's a lot of things that people want to have intention with to talk about, like conceptually with their music. But a lot of times, sometimes the best things are kind of so layered in ways that you can kind of understand it and then be surprised, be like, oh man, like this song is actually about this, and this is crazy. I never even knew that.
Yeah, right on. Well, let's listen to it and we'll come back and talk about it a little bit more.
Excellent.
Here's a Kosci by Luisa Brina e Liquidificador.
Mostra a nossa luta. Thank you.
Cool. That was Quaschi by Luisa Bedina. And that's a great song. Thanks for sharing that one.
Definitely.
Yeah. I know she's from Sao Paulo, which is my hometown.
She is?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So I didn't know that either.
Yeah. Biggest city in South America. I mean, most, you know, it's either Sao Paulo or Rio or something.
Right, right.
Yeah. That was cool. I like, you mentioned the clarinets, and that's something that, frankly, we don't see enough. I just saw Andy Schaaf last week, and there's always a clarinet on stage with Andy Schaaf, and I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Those are beautiful instruments.
Absolutely. Yeah. The arrangements were like deep, very Brazilian. I was trying to listen to some of the lyrics, and one thing I always see in Brazilian music is that Brazilian artists love to sing about Brazil and being Brazilian.
Right.
So she like sets a mood talking about like samba and Brazil, like comes up in the song.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. There's something really special, I think. I think if you're a fan of Brazilian music, and there's an era for sure that became very popular, but even now there's like a great compilation by that label out of the Netherlands called Music from Memory.
Oh, yeah.
And it's called Outro Tempo. And it's all electronic and weirder Brazilian music from the 80s and 90s. And it's beautiful. It's like remarkable. It kind of like turns the page for a lot of folks to kind of like see that, you know, it didn't just stop with, you know, Caetano or, you know, yeah. Chim Maia and people like that,
yeah.
Which is, you know, I feel like an era that's still like present, but I think it more than anything, it kind of like is testament that things just keep going on everywhere.
Totally.
And places like that have a rich culture to like continually like talk about all the things that they're doing, and everywhere else too, like even in Ecuador, there's like such an amazing, beyond like some of the people, like the contemporaries, like Nicola Cruz.
Yeah, and
like,
we're listening to the song. We're talking about Nicola, who we've played on the show before.
There's a rich history of things that people are maybe like completely unaware of. And even people who are Ecuadorian, people who are like, who've come to this country, like my folks probably don't know half the people that I've been like really digging into. And I think that just, you know, it takes like a little bit of like a music nerd to get into it. And then,
totally.
And then unfortunately, sometimes it becomes like this, a compilation kind of thing, which kind of helps shed light, but you know, I feel like there's things that need, justice needs to be done for certain
yeah.
artists. And there's a lot. There's one artist in particular in Ecuador called Polivio Mayorga, who this guy brought a Moog synthesizer to Ecuador in like the 70s, I think, or the 60s. And he started doing like all these cumbias that people were just like, what is this?
Yeah.
You know? And then it became, you know, extended into like Colombia's like Afro sound. And then it extended into like the chicha in Peru.
Yeah.
And I think there's like these things, you know? So it's like with her, I think she's like expressing this side of like Brazilian richness, but also like this classical contemporary
yeah.
like way of like expressing music that people maybe don't really realize how it can be. It doesn't have to be in a performing arts center.
Totally.
You know?
And like the arrangements there remind me of, you know, at any point in time, if you go to especially like cities in the South, like I was in Florianopolis once and it was winter and we're just kind of cruising the town and you walk up to like the sidewalk bars and there's college kids just having a jam session with like, there's a flute and a clarinet in the jam session. It's not just like drums and guitar, typical what we see out here. And it sounds like that.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, it's very Brazilian and it's gorgeous.
Definitely.
Right on. We'll link that compilation on the blog, by the way. What was it called again from that?
Outro Tempo.
Outro Tempo.
Music from Memory. And then they have a second. They've just come out with a second one. But the first one is remarkable to get into.
Cool.
And the second one was just as great.
I can't wait to listen to it. And we'll link it on the blog at noisepop.com/podcast on this episode's page. Speaking of Brazil, the next one that you have here for us is also Brazilian. And personally, I'm very happy about it. Why don't you? and hopefully our listeners will be too. This is, you talk about history.
Yeah.
And this is, you know.
Yeah, Luis Bonfá is like, this record in particular, I think it's called Introspection. It's the first track off of this record called Enchanted Mirror. Coincidentally, the first track of Luisa Brina's record song was Costi from that record. But
right on.
Enchanted Mirror, there's just something special about this song. It's just, it's maybe everything I love about music in general and sound, how things can be mysterious and confusing. And you hear someone playing and you're like, how many people are playing? Is it one or is it two? And then like, what? They put this effect on there. It's like this weird like flange or phaser thing. And it's just like, it becomes like this really heady thing for folks that are really into sound and music, but also it's also mystical. that it can like kind of I don't know, just straddle all these things without being anything specific. It doesn't feel like an old song, but it feels like an ancient song that's like always present, you know?
Yeah. And Bonfa is, you know, doesn't, it's kind of like Syl Johnson was lost in the shadows of Al Green. You know, it's like Bonfa was kind of lost in the shadows of Gilberto.
Right.
But, you know, one could say that Bonfa is like the originator of Bossa Nova, you know, and like the,
sure.
He did the score for Black Orpheus, which is like, that's like the story about him. That was like the first record that really kind of started building steam around Bossa Nova before it was Bossa Nova.
And that's how I learned about him. I think I saw that movie in like film, like when I was like in one of my film classes in college, and I was like, man, what is this tune?
And then Jobim was heavily involved. And then, you know, that's, they always, with all those old Brazilian songs, one guy records it and then everybody else starts recording it too.
Yeah.
So
it's like Jamaican music, like rhythms, you know, like things like it becomes popular and everyone kind of extends like the same feeling.
Yeah. Well, let's listen to this song. We'll come back and talk about it a little bit more. This is Enchanted Mirror by Luiz Bonfá. Thank you. we were just the last part went towards the middle, towards the end of that song. And you said there was like a certain effect that came up, and you were just talking about how it kind of comes out of nowhere. It's like a little psychedelic effect.
Yeah. It's subtle in the arrangement where it's, I think it's an important thing that that's a part of my music, that is the relationship between the sound, the arrangement, and nuance and details. And I've always liked it when people insert these details that don't over, it's like you're not trying to overcompensate because there's something that's missing. It's like you understand that there's a moment here, but you're finding a really cool tool to express that without doing the thing that seems obvious. And with this song, they kind of like put in this really strange like phaser, flanger, like kind of like Ottawa effect that like happens just in this moment, this like transitional moment where like everything kind of speeds up and then slows down, and the change comes up, or the measure, or the it all starts over again. And that's really, that's for me, it's like always at the core of like what I'm making. It's how can you remove all expectations of what someone is expecting as a listener, even myself, and utilize like tools and explore new tools that can be something that has like the effect that you're, the anticipated effect, but in a completely new perspective. And I think that's what I've always loved about music. And I think that's what's always like surprised me in like anyone who's done anything that I love. Like sometimes you're just like, it's the real subtle things that make a larger difference.
And that's exactly what I was going to ask you, if that's something you employed, you know, and This Is How You Smile.
Yeah, there's so much of that for me in there. And in all the music I've always made, the thing is I've always mixed and recorded and done everything myself. And so it's all in there. So I'm always constantly just looking at the song and understanding it more and more, and then like inserting things and burying things and stacking things. And a lot of my music is vertical. It isn't horizontal. It isn't working left to right. So I'm kind of working in a way where as I'm adding sounds, they're all going in a vertical way. And you may not feel it. You may not know it or hear it, but you kind of, I'm sorry, you may not hear it in a very like obvious way, but you can feel how there's these things changing. And I think that's really important to me, because I think I initially used that technique as a way to hide or mask that I didn't have this like specific musical background of like going to school for music or writing or anything like that. Like I just learned sound and music through making sound and music, arranging it on my own via samplers and things like that when I was younger. And so I think just learning, creating this whole new way of like making sound for myself in terms of like using effects and sounds that are just strange in terms of arrangement, that doesn't feel like, you know, I maybe even like thought I was making pop music at some point. Where yeah. I was like, this is the chorus, and then this is the chorus again, and this is the chorus again.
Well, it's funny because on this album, you actually brought in a lot of musical friends towards the end of the process, right, to kind of help fill in the gaps, or maybe even do some of this, add some of this randomness. And it makes me think of, I read that Sufjan Stevens played this piano line on, was it on My Name Is For My Friends? Or which song was it on?
November 7th, he's on
November
that.
November 7th, yeah. And there's a piano line at the end that is just kind of inserted in there, and it just kind of worked.
Yeah. So throughout the record, there was these collages that were ongoing, and the ones that made it are on the record right now. And I've always made these like audio collages and things that are like me smashing together sounds that are like from field recordings and things like that. I've always kind of like, that's always been a part of like my work process. And then I build songs through that a lot of times. For this record, I asked a lot of friends. I was just texting people, and I must have texted like 100 people. I was like, yo, like, what are you doing right now? Just like, just record whatever's happening with your phone for a minute. And maybe like, you know, 15 people got back to me.
Yeah. It's a lot of people.
And then like, like Sufjan was one of them, who just like sent me this like weird piano thing that was like a recording on something else. And then I added this whole other layer at the end of it. And coincidentally, when I was sequencing the record, it was in the right key for the song that followed it, which was Todo Lo Que Me Falta. So it was like, he did this thing and it just like, it was like all these beautiful serendipitous like things. And I think that's why I like it. I think sometimes it's important to insert processes that are so outside of like where you've been, because it can inform so much more about what you're doing. So you're not stuck in some like wormhole of a record and you're just like, this song has to be just like this.
Yeah. You know? And maybe that's what I'm thinking about. You mentioned field recordings. On My Name Is For My Friends, there's a field recording of a protest, mm-hmm. right? Of a, like, was it a Abolish ICE?
Yeah. In New York, I was walking from where I would take the bus to the studio I was working out of, and then I would get off the bus and I would have to walk a good like 15 minutes, and it was right where the Brooklyn Bridge was lets off into Brooklyn from Manhattan. And there was a march across the bridge, and it ended right in this point where like I get off the bus, and I didn't even know it was happening, and it was all just coincidental. And so I was just hanging out, and I was I was just present. But
you just pulled out your phone to record it.
I did without any intention. Like I said, I usually just record moments and listen to sounds later just for my own enjoyment. And sometimes they end up in recordings. There's not like, I'm not like, oh, this is going to be on the record. You know, it was just kind of like, it just happened to just come together.
For sure. Well, let's talk about this next song that you have picked here. You know, there's something that I think that you've really looked to represent on in your songwriting is a voice for, you know, just different communities, sometimes marginalized communities. And this artist, you know, fits into that and sort of, you know, based on their makeup and who they are in one way or another. But tell us about this song and the next one you have picked for us here.
Definitely. Beverly Glenn Copeland is music that came to me via a label that I was avidly following called Invisible Cities or Invisible City Edition. When did I get that right or wrong? I can't remember. But then it was later re-released by something, a label called Seance, I think.
Right on.
I might have that all wrong, but it came to me via the store that, also the store that Revenge, the label I released, This Is How You Smile on.
Yeah.
They have a storefront in New York City called Commend, and one of the people who works there,
Seance Center is the label.
Seance Center, yeah. Their name is Nina, and she was always just like turning me on to different music, and she's like, you should check this out. And I think it was Nina, the first person who turned me on to it, and I just sank into that record. So in 2016, Invisible City Editions put out this record, like the first re-release version of it, and I think that's when I got it, and it spoke to me in such a really cool way, where there's a hushness and a very like personal communication there that doesn't feel common in a lot of music that comes from like a studio. And I think there's a way to create this idea of intimacy, I think. There's like a formula where people, you know, put a microphone in a room and it sounds like a room, and it sounds like someone's in that room, like kind of just like sharing everything they have. And you're just like, yeah, this is a very personal record. It's a very like intimate record. But sometimes like it just falls flat because it feels like it's just dialed in to the idea of what a personal record can feel and sound like, you know. But I think with Glenn's record, they were able to just kind of like do that thing, just what I was saying before, just use these technologies, these tools that maybe they were just like completely not really using before, which were like synthesizers and drum machines, and able to kind of re-pivot the thing that Glenn had, which was these very sincere ideas and songs through music by channeling what they knew as this form of expression, but just kind of repositioning and be like, let me just do this on this keyboard and let me just do this with this drum machine. And you feel that. You feel how they were able to be extremely effective without having to maybe dial in these ideas of just like, well, I have these great songs, I'm going to play them on piano and sing them. You know, and not that that's always wrong, but I think Glenn knew that you could Glenn knew that this was the way to do it, and you could feel it in that music. You can hear it. Recently, I was at the MoMA PS1, and I think Glenn did their first performance in New York, sharing a lot of this music with a band, and it was beautiful. And there was a documentary before that that I think you can find online that kind of shares a lot of Glenn's history from him. He kind of he tells everything from his perspective. Like, it's really cool.
And I'll look for that documentary, and if I can find it, I'll likewise link that on the blog at noisepop.com/podcast. Let's listen to the song. We'll come back and talk a little bit more about it. Sunset Village by Beverly Glenn Copeland. Thank you. Sunset Village by Beverly Glenn Copeland. That was gorgeous.
Yeah. It was cool. And the documentaries are super insightful. There's like so much that Glenn's talking about how he is able to come to music and how music comes to him in terms of writing and in terms of composing and recording. But they're always talking about how they're just kind of overcome in this like very like spiritual way where the music just hits him and he's like, oh my God, I have this song and I just have to just do this. And I think that's really cool to express and to be that in tune with like your process where like, I think a lot of us get inspired, but I think it's cool to hear someone who has a direct relationship with that inspiration and knows that it's, this is what it's telling me to do. And It was really cool. And I love hearing people's processes and who I'm a huge fan of their work or a piece of work that they've done. And this record specifically is like really fun. I wrote to Glenn, like when I first heard this record, I was like, in 2016, I was like, well, you know, it was kind of this like, I was like, I love the record. I love this so much. I don't know. It was probably some like terrible like fan boy kind of email, but
it's okay to do that, you know what I mean?
But I was also like,
please send Roberto all of your Lado Negro fan mail.
But I was also like, you know what, I can't remember if there were credits on the record about the equipment used, but I was like, oh, what synths did you use for this? I was just so curious about the process more than anything, not necessarily about like, you know, what the tech setup was, but just maybe I could have better worded the question in a very like, well, what's your process? And Glenn responded and kind of just like, it was just a super sweet email and response. Cool. And I really appreciated that. And I think I never expect anyone to spend that much more energy. I feel like it's a lot of like energy to just like make a lot of work and to share. If you have time to share, I think that's really cool. And the fact that Glenn found time, it wasn't like, you know, I don't know Glenn, I've never met him. So that was really fun.
Yeah. Right on. That's powerful. I love that. It kind of reminded me of something that would be in like a montage or transition sequence of like an 80s film or something, you know?
Yeah. Maybe Glenn was in a montage. I think they were definitely like experiencing like a change in their life. You'll see if you can get a chance to see the documentary. It's really,
sure.
it gives
For
you
sure.
like a,
no, I'm definitely interested. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. Speaking of soundtracks and scores and stuff, you did a little bit of that for the S-Town podcast, correct?
Yeah.
I listened to that and I was like, I heard and they were like, oh, our music was done by Lado Negro. And I was like, no way.
Not all. Yeah. There was, I mean, the composers on there, there was like four
Trey Pollard
composers.
Was on it too, right?
Yeah.
I know him from Natalie Press.
Yeah.
And that old Richmond scene.
Trey's played on a bunch of my records.
Cool.
Actually.
Very talented musician.
He's played pedal steel and he's done some like string arrangements for a lot of the Island Universe story stuff.
Cool.
He's on there. I'm spacing on the other two composers, but you know, those kind of things are like, they ask you to make a whole lot of music and then they only use so much.
Sure.
You know, but it was super fun to be a part of the process and understand how they put that all together.
A gripping podcast, by the way.
Yeah.
And I don't listen to a lot of like storytelling type of podcasts. That was like just road trip fodder to the max. It was so good.
Definitely.
Yeah.
I agree.
S-Town Podcast. We'll link that too. We're going to link everything on the blog, you know, so you guys can get the most out of this this great conversation we're having here. We have a fourth song for you here before we jump into the El Lado Negro song. So tell us about the fourth song you have here on your My Mix.
The fourth song is a song called Love Room, all one word, by Frank Harris and Maria Marquez. And I don't know much about Frank Harris, and I know very little about Maria Marquez, but this record was shared to me. I go to record stores a lot.
Sure.
It's, you know, I mainly buy my music at record stores, or I go on Bandcamp. That's kind of like my two primary places where I buy.
And My Mix is really kind of like digging in the crates with you. You know what I mean? Like that's kind of the idea behind this episode format. So this is cool.
So it's really important for me to have those relationships just because that's how I've always done it. And maybe, you know, younger generations have these new relationships and I think that's fine as well. But the reason I go is because I meet these people, like I was saying before, Nina at Commands shared Beverly Glenn Copeland's record with me. And then this record was shared to me by Simon, who runs a record store in New York in Manhattan called Two Bridges. And that store is phenomenal. And he was just like, check this out. You know, it's kind of just like one of these things where I'm like, I'm always like, I'll go through records and I'm like, oh, what do you recommend? And he's kind of like caught my vibe there where the things seen what I've bought there over the like past couple of years. And he handed me this record and I put on like the first two songs. I was like, yeah, this is crazy. It's enchanting, you know. It's these same things where it's like I think these people were musicians or are musicians, and then they collaborated in a way where it was like again like this way of like realigning, repositioning your ideas in these new forms and formats and processes. And I've listened to a lot of Maria Marquez's other music, and
she's Venezuelan,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
She's a Venezuelan artist. I don't really know much about her history, but you could just tell that there was just like this beautiful coincidence that happened between, I'm assuming Frank Harris produced a lot of this music. Maybe
he's
not.
He's still a producer, right? Isn't he like?
I don't know. You know? I haven't like dug in yet.
I was digging a little and there was like, it jumped from like old productions and then it was like Jason Derulo. And I was like, I don't know if this is the same Frank Harris.
And
like,
it is.
I was like, it is?
I don't know.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
No, I don't know. Yeah. But I don't know who he is, but I'm assuming just listening to her other music and listening to these arrangements that there was just like a difference in just the sound itself. And it just sounds so special. You can hear the time and the place and the relationships with the sounds. And I think some people were like, oh, it sounds very 80s. But I mean, in a way, I don't think so. I think it just sounds special. And it's hard. I know I'm not articulating this song the best, but the song's just so good.
Yeah. Well, hey, I like it. That's a perfect intro right there. Let's listen to it. Love Room by Maria Marquez and the mysterious Frank Harris.
I don't know how this feels.
Okay, so that was Love Room by Frank Harris and Maria Marquez. And while we were listening to the song, we've been kind of trying to figure out really who these people are, Frank Harris and Maria Marquez. And that's kind of cool. I don't think we've had one of these on a My Mix episode before where we didn't really know that much about the artist. But Maria is a San Francisco based by all accounts, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, I think these records are like, you know, if you're of the Discog breed.
Yeah.
I think one of the first, they made a 7-inch for a song called Canto del Pilón. And, you know, it's one of these records that someone's selling currently for $800.
Oh, wow.
You know, on.
You're bringing the $800 on Discog shit into the studio for us to listen to today.
Yeah, right. But it's enchanting. And this is the most exciting thing about music is like to be turned on to it by someone that you trust, and then no offense to Spotify or Apple Music, yeah. You know, these algorithms are cool, but it's cool when you can see someone's taking their time to like find the things that they really like and to share them with other people. And I think, I don't know much about her music or Frank Harris, but it's kind of like when it all comes, it comes, and then the record's amazing. And I think just sinking into it for as long as you can is cool, and then maybe learning more when you can is also cool. And she's got a lot of stuff on Spotify to like just dig into
the discographies. And yeah, that's always my favorite when I discover somebody and it's like, oh wow, they have 8 albums.
Yeah,
you know. And I think it's cool that what you just described is kind of what you're doing here today for us. And, and you know, we appreciate it. And, there's a lot to be taken from, you know, having these types of conversations with somebody like you. And, you know, we love your music. And I think this is a good transition to talking about your song off of This Is How You Smile that you picked for us today. And it's a Sabana de Luz. Mm-hmm. And tell us about why you chose that song for the My Mix.
So this one's actually not the version off the record, it's the version off of something we just released recently and was a live recording at KCRW. And we did it at Village Studios in LA, which is like this cool historic studio. And it was really fun. It was like the piano there that was like Oscar Peterson's piano. And it was just, I put together this small group of musicians that I've worked with, and it's a drummer. Her name is Ana Barreiro. She's Brazilian, actually.
Yeah. Barreiro in Portuguese, yeah.
Yeah, and a good friend of mine, Adron, who sings on a lot of my records, she played guitar and sang. And then a good friend of mine, Oliver Hill, he played bass. And then the two people who usually tour with me, Nathaniel Morgan and Angela Morris, she played piano and violin, and he played saxophone and like effects. And this song, Sabana de Luz, it was just a cool version. So we all got together the day before and rehearsed for 3 hours and then did this KCRW session. We're cool. Like, oh, cool, this is a great like feeling. And I mean, it's not, there's a thing, a lot of my music is about like kind of like tying all the loose ends and making everything like really like decorative and or somehow just like making sure it's exactly what you want to live with for the rest of your life. And there's something really special about this KCRW thing where it was this feeling of like knowing that we just learned it, and then this is what it sounded like when we put it together the next day.
For sure.
And I really like that. I really like to know that there's like so much out there, and there's a lot of like just nuance and weirdness that happened that isn't necessarily a part of like the original arrangements, but it was just there, you know.
Very cool. And and you've always sang in both English and in Spanish in pretty much all your records, and this is one of the songs in Spanish.
Yeah,
and so
this is in Spanish. And actually I was going to say that about the Maria Marquez record. She sings in Spanish and in English on that record as well, and so I think that was something that's
cool.
Like always
spoke
like
to you.
Yeah, I think it's always exciting for me to just like have those different records in my mind, because you can see how people have always done this, and it's not like this like anomaly of like contemporary society or anything. It's just something that exists and it's always just there. It's just sometimes things aren't that popular, right? But people are always sharing as many languages as possible.
Right on. Let's listen to this song. We'll come back and talk to Roberto a little bit more when it's done. This is Sabana de Luz by El Lado Negro.
E esse mini años leí tu nombre. Nadie quiere pensar que hay algo en la nada y tu cuerpo de luz sale.
That I've released that I didn't mix myself.
Oh yeah, this right here.
Mm-hmm. Rachel Alina mixed it. She masters a lot of music. She mastered This Is How You Smile, actually.
Cool.
So she mixed this and
right on.
She's the only person I mean it was cool. She did a really awesome job.
Yeah. That sounds great. I could see it. It's kind of funny, or I guess it's probably really amazing for you to see all these different iterations that these songs take, you know, because when you're playing 100 shows a year, you know, it could feel monotonous at some point. So something like this, you know, you just said it's the first song of yours that you didn't mix, and it really meant something to you.
Definitely.
You know?
Yeah. It's so weird. It's always so weird to, it's always strange to share things that you're uncertain about because it's so new to you and it's so ingrained for it to be one way. And I think I've been trying to open myself up a lot more to being like, do I feel uncomfortable about this because it's something I don't like? Or is it just because it's something new and an idea I just don't understand or feel, or just kind of like, I'm just like wanting it to be the thing that I think it's supposed to be and not really, not really just like kind of like embracing the difference in it. And I think that's where my mindset has been over the past year, is like, how do I embrace, and maybe this is like more philosophical with life stuff, but I think just maybe starting with music is helpful, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, man, that was quite the mix right there. I enjoy that. This is always my favorite episode format that we do, and it's always nice to have people like you in the studio and come in and join us. It was funny, we talked for so long. I was gonna bring up another El Lado Negro song and we play that, but I think this is a good my mix here. One thing I wanted to ask you was about those Island Universe story collections or collages you referred to earlier. Mm-hmm. Do those seem to inform a lot of your work on your LPs? You know, and there was which song was it? It was Segundo Dia. Oh, that was off of Canta Lechuza. That sounded like running to me.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And then I found another one on Las Preguntas from Island University Part 2.
Mm-hmm.
Sounded like it became Come Be Me.
That's cool.
Yeah. And I don't know if that was like, if these are like studies, you know, like sometimes you go to a museum and you see the works of art, and then in like another room, there's like the charcoal sketches that were the studies for the big thing, you know? So I don't know if that's what you do with those.
Maybe. No, I mean, I wouldn't say
subconsciously,
that, maybe
perhaps.
Definitely. I mean, I always feel like I make the same damn song over and over again, you know? And sometimes you're just like, what am I doing? And I think for sure, I don't have this like, I'm not under the illusion that I'm like making some masterpiece when I'm like, where I'm like, oh, this is the best. You know, I'm almost always like, oh my gosh, am I going to share this with somebody? You know? And I think that's really an important perspective for me, because I think the things that I do share, I really do care about the most. And I think I could see how there would be like overlaps in
for
like,
sure.
in like some kind of sonic, whatever.
Well, you even said at the beginning, it's like bringing, you know, yourself out in this music and being in this, like, you know, tie it all back together, I guess, that you were able to be in a more solitary place when you recorded This Is How You Smile, that you were able to pull things out of yourself that you might have not been able to in the past. And maybe it's just kind of been there for, heck, years.
Yeah.
You know? So.
Maybe we should make a 7-inch of Come Be Me and Las Preguntas.
Ooh.
We'll do that.
Ooh.
Do that for you.
Oh,
Amy.
My God. Wow. That's amazing. Well, I'll look forward to that. And that's something that I cannot link on the blog at noisebob.com/podcast. But
we're going to have a pre-order up this weekend.
Yeah. That's so cool. That's so cool. I hope that becomes a real thing. Roberto, thank you so much. This was a wonderful conversation. El Lado Negro, This Is How You Smile, is out now on Revenge International. And we'll look forward to tonight at Great American Music Hall, Noise Pop Fest 2020. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, cheers. The Noise Pop Podcast is produced by me and Molly Bolton. This episode was recorded by Kelly Coyne. Great to have Kelly back. Thank you so much. Big thanks to Different Fur Studios, where this episode is recorded. Patrick Brown at Different Fur, Text Me Records, as always. Michael Nano Solarzano helped us set up the session. Big thanks to Adrian Lee at Noise Pop for marketing. Kevin Arnold's our executive producer. And the biggest thanks of all to Roberto Carlos Lange of El Lado Negro, and to Paul Dryden, who helped set this up with his manager, Derek, as well. So, until next time, I'm your host, Adrian Spinelli. Cheers.